Chapter 13. The fourth and last role of leadership is called empowering. So the title of this chapter 13 is The Empowering Voice, Releasing Passion and Talent. Harold Grenin, the former chairman of ITT, put it this way: the best way to inspire people to a superior performance is to convince them by everything you do and by your everyday attitude that you are wholeheartedly supporting them. The myth of empowering is called carrot and sticking, the great jackass theory, as being the best form of motivation and empowerment. That's the old paradigm. The new paradigm, carrot and stick motivation, is basically animal psychology. Because people have the power to choose. They are not things. You can buy someone's back, but you can't buy their heart and mind. You can buy their hands, but not their spirit. The new paradigm deals with the whole person, body, mind, heart, and spirit. The first alternative to the empowering role of leadership is trying to get results by controlling people. The second alternative would be to set them loose, to abandon them, to go into permissiveness. In other words, preach empowerment when in fact you're really into abdication and ignoring accountability. The third alternative is both tougher and kinder. You see, it's directed autonomy through win-win agreements around cascading line-of-sight goals and accountability for results. I mentioned earlier that I believe most organizations, including our homes, are overmanaged and underled. Because the friction in our relationships with our children is a painful reminder of this reality, as is the rebellion that often ensues, and because the family setting is so universal, I'm going to begin our discussion of the challenge of empowerment with the true story of a friend and partner of mine who, with his wife, work to overcome a challenge with their children. This is his language. I noticed a dark cloud forming over my wife one day, so I asked her, "What's wrong?" "I'm so discouraged," she answered. "Mornings with the kids before school are awful. I feel that if I were not here telling them what to do next, nothing would ever happen. They'd never get to school. They'd never get ready. They'd never get out of bed. I don't know what to do." So I decided to observe the next morning. She went into each room starting at about 6:15, gave each child a gentle nudge and said, "Honey, it's time to get up. Wake up." She returned two or three times until they were all rousted out. Then she turned on the shower for the one who has the toughest time getting up. For the next 10 minutes, my wife returned to the shower repeatedly, tapped three other times on the glass door and said, "Time to get out." "I will," came the defensive answer. Our daughter finally turned off the shower, dried off, went to her room, curled up into a little ball on the floor, and covered her body with the towel to warm up. 10 minutes later, "Honey, you've got to get dressed. Come on." "I don't have anything to wear." "Wear this. I don't like those clothes. They're ugly." "What do you want to wear?" "My jeans, but they're dirty." The emotional scenario continued until all three were called downstairs at 6:45. My wife continued to prod the children from one thing to the next, warning that the carpool would be coming any minute. They finally got out the door with a hug and a kiss, and Mom was exhausted. I was exhausted just having watched her all morning. I thought, no wonder she's miserable. Those kids don't know they're capable of anything themselves because we're always there reminding them. That tapping on the shower door became a symbol of how we had both unintentionally enabled their irresponsibility. So I called the family together one evening and suggested a new approach. I've noticed that we're having quite a time with our mornings. Everyone started laughing knowingly. I said, "Who likes the way things are going?" No one raised a hand. So I said, "I want to tell you something that I want you to really think about. Here it is. You have within you the power to make choices. You can be responsible." Then I went through a whole series of questions. I asked, "How many of you can set an alarm clock yourself, then get up on your own each morning?" They all kind of looked at me like, Dad, what are you doing? I said, no, really, how many of you can do this? Each raised a hand. How many of you can be aware enough of the time that you can remember how long you have to shower and then turn off the water by yourself? They all raised their hands. How many of you can go into your room, choose the clothes you want, and then get dressed yourself? It was getting to be fun because they all thought, I can do that. If you don't have the clothes you want, how many of you are capable of checking out what clothes you have the night before, and if the clothes you want are dirty, can do a load of your clothes in the washer and dryer? I can do that. How many of you have the power to make your own bed and get your room cleaned up without being asked or reminded? Everyone raised a hand. How many of you can be downstairs at 6:45 for our family time and breakfast? They all raised a hand. We went on through every single thing. In each case, they agreed. I have the power and capacity to do this. Then I said, okay, what we're going to do is write all of this down. We're going to create and agree to a plan for our mornings. They wrote down all the things they wanted to do and worked out a schedule. Our daughter, with whom we were having the greatest struggle, was the most excited. She wrote a schedule down to the very minute. We became their source of help on some things. There were a few guidelines. We decided on how and when they'd be accountable and what the consequences would be. The positive consequences were that everyone would be a lot happier in the morning, especially Mom. And we all know that a happy mom means a happy family. The negative consequence to not getting up on time and completing all their responsibilities on their own was that they would go to bed a half an hour earlier for a few days. This seemed fair, since lack of sleep usually makes it difficult to get up. Each child signed their agreement, ate a bowl of ice cream, and went off to bed. So we thought, okay, we'll see what happens. The next morning at 6 o'clock, my wife and I were lying in bed. We heard an alarm go off and the light click on in one of the kids' rooms. Before we knew it, our daughter, with whom we'd had the toughest time, ran to the shower, turned on the water, and got in. My wife and I smiled at each other in mild amazement. We had real hopes that it would work with her. But 15 minutes early? Within 15 or 20 minutes, she had done everything that usually took an hour and a half. And she even had time to get her piano practicing done. We had a great morning. The other kids did the same thing. After the kids were out the door, my wife said, I am in heaven. But the real test is, will this continue? I can see them getting really excited about one morning, but will it go on? Well, it's been over a year now. Though we haven't always had quite the enthusiasm of that first morning, with only occasional exceptions, which were followed by earlier bedtimes for a few days, they've all gotten up and done everything on their own, especially our middle daughter. We've also found it helpful to come together every few months to evaluate how we're doing and to renew our commitment. It's been wonderful to see the children grow in their sense of, I can do this. I have the power. I am responsible. We try not to remind. It's been a profound lesson, and it totally changed the nature of our family life in the mornings. Close quote. You can see that the parents were initially trying to work from the mindset that says kids needed to change, but gradually came to the awareness that they, that is the parents, needed to change. The mindset was that kids needed reminding. You've got to check up, hover, and follow up. Maybe you've worked for someone like that. It's classic management or control thinking. But then the parents reflected on their children's worth and potential, particularly their potential. They knew the children had tremendous worth and they loved them unconditionally, but they had fallen into the typical trap of looking at their children through the lens of misbehavior. They had also not clearly communicated to the children their potential. They did this by asking some simple questions about whether the children believed, if they had the mind to, that they could do the basic things of getting up, doing their jobs, and getting ready to go to school. Because the children so identified emotionally with the parents, the communication took. Commitments were made and kept, potential was released, responsibility was taken, growth took place, mutual trust and confidence increased, and peace of mind and peace at home resulted. It's a beautiful, powerful example of empowerment, and a beautiful example of using a knowledge worker approach. Even though this is a simple little family problem, most families can identify with it. Sometimes in organizations as well as families, people believe in the potential of others, but not in their worth. So they're not patient, persistent, long-suffering, trust-giving, and self-sacrificing. It's just not worth it to them. It becomes a cost-benefit analysis, and they perhaps unwittingly conclude that the cost is too great. In fact, unless people have a sense of their own personal worth, they will not be able to consistently communicate the worth of other people. Let's review these four roles again. Modeling principle-centered trustworthy behavior inspires trust without talking about it. Pathfinding creates order without demanding it. Aligning nourishes both vision and empowerment without proclaiming them. And empowering is the fruit of the other three. It is the natural result of both personal and organizational trustworthiness, which enables people to identify and unleash their human potential. In other words, empowering enthrones self-control, self-management, and self-organizing. If this commissioning takes place, not just in organizational pathfinding, but at the team, project, task, or job level, where the basic needs of the people and the organization overlap, it taps into passion, energy, and drive. In short, voice. Passion is the fire, enthusiasm, and courage that an individual feels when he or she is doing something that he or she loves while accomplishing worthy ends, something that satisfies his or her deepest needs. Again, remember the roots of the word enthusiasm means God in you. Empowerment is exactly the same thing, only it's in the organizational context of employees doing work they love and doing it in such a way that meets their deepest needs and the essential needs of the organization. Their voices blend. In the book, Now Discover Your Strengths, authors Marcus Buckingham and Donald O. Clifton report this key finding of the Gallup organization. Quote, "The great organization must not only accommodate the fact that each employee is different, it must capitalize on these differences." Close quote. The authors also report Gallup's research findings surrounding the following question, asked of 198,000 employees working in 7,939 business units within 36 companies. Quote, "At work, do you have the opportunity to do what you do best every day?" We then compared the response to the performance of the business units and discovered the following. When employees answered strongly agree to this question, they were 50% more likely to work in business units with lower employee turnover, 38% more likely to work in more productive business units, and 44% more likely to work in business units with higher customer satisfaction scores. And over time, those business units that increased the number of employees who strongly agreed saw company increase in productivity, customer loyalty, and employee retention. Close quote. Just think about your own personal life. What kind of job do you like? What kind of supervision? What taps into your deepest passion? What if you had a job that tapped into your passion and a job in which your leaders became your servants, where they existed to personally and systematically help you to do your job? What if structures and systems were supportive, helpful, and were geared toward enabling, identifying, and releasing your potential? What if you were continuously recognized and rewarded, and most importantly, felt the intrinsic satisfaction of contributing significantly to a cause you felt worthy of such heartfelt commitment?